Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life. No purchase necessary. VGW. Void or prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus. Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void or prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com. That's ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
This podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network. This podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network. This podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network. This podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network. This podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
At Discount Tire, we know your time is valuable. Get 30% shorter average wait time when you buy and book online. Did you know Discount Tire now sells wiper blades? Check out our current deals at DiscountTire.com or stop in and talk to an associate today. Discount Tire.
Let's get you taken care of.
This podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
It's the Marketer's Report. This week, Patrizia Spagnoletto, Global Chief Marketing Officer, Direct-to-Consumer for Warner Brothers Discovery, weighs in on the difficult task of building and retaining consumer trust.
Trust is a really hard thing to build and a really easy thing to destroy, and we have to be very respectful about that. Our partnership with iHeart has really helped us build that trust and that relationship with the on-air talent. The best thing for us to do is to build a relationship with our consumers. And if those consumers have a relationship with the DJs that are on air, then we want to build on that. House of the Dragon, which was one of our most successful, if not the most successful campaign we've ever done for a show, audio was a core part of that.
As the number one audio company, iHeartMedia gives you access to all. Every audience, live conversations, trusted influencers, and the insights and data you need to grow. Not just a media company, iHeartMedia is your access company. Go to iHeartResults.com for more.
Celtic State of Mind. My name is Laura Bradburn, and as always, I am joined by Tony Haggerty. How you doing, Tony?
Very well, Laura. Yourself?
Not too bad, not too bad. And we are joined once again by Jim. Or how you doing, Jim?
Good, Laura. Good to be back, yeah.
Good to be back. Good to have you back. Lots to catch up on, a defeat and a comfortable victory. The kind of course of the season so far as it has been. Kind of up and down in every single way. We'll come to you first, Tony, on it. You did your man-by-mans for the Celtic Way last night.
I did.
A brief summary from you of how you thought the game went.
I thought Celtic were always comfortable. First 20 minutes, people were getting a bit agitated, but, you know, it took a class goal, and it was a class goal. Beautiful pass from James McCarthy, you know, who's, again, came in for a bit of criticism. A lovely ball to Jota, and once the first goal was in, that's it. You could sense the kind of, you know, collective sigh of relief from the fans as well, and everybody just relaxing on it, you know. And I thought that the only surprise was it was maybe not more. But they did a professional enough job, if not clinical. No, people say that's wrong with the Championship, but in cup games you're on a hiding to nothing with these kind of games. You win 6-0, people don't bat an eyelid. You know, you comfortably win 3-0. People are, you know, still looking for possible negatives, but they did the job. Got to the semi-final, first semi-final for Ange and the players. So that's the big positive, and that's what you take. And my man Bamanza, I thought McCarthy and Jota were the standouts, and Cameron Carter-Vickers continues to impress, and Liam Scales and Adam Montgomery, notable mentions. Montgomery I really like Montgomery. I don't think he's ever let him down when he's been asked to perform the role. And Liam Scales, for what little he was on the park, he was okay. He did fine, and mm-hmm. you know, fairly confident in him moving forward.
Yeah, it was a strange game. Like you said, I don't think anybody had a bad game. I think we kind of took our foot off the gas, as you are sometimes want to do when you go 3-0 up early in the second half. But you know, I was encouraged by some of the signs that I saw. Jim, did you manage to make it to the game last night? What were your thoughts on what you saw?
I think as Tony said, you're not hiding to nothing when a team, the league below you, you're expected to win the game. It's all about qualifying for the next round, and I think it was a very functional performance. I think they did what they had to do, and move on to the next round, and hopefully we get to the final. So yeah, it's one of these games that it's kind of hard to get excited about, because mm-hmm. because you're playing a lower league club, and as Tony said, if you win 6-0, people just, so what? If you win 1-0, they'd be going the opposite way. So it's just about getting through, and we'll go it through, which is the main thing.
Yeah, Tony mentioned Liam Scales coming off the bench, and we'll talk about him a little bit first. I thought he looked very assured on the ball, the little that we did see of him, and you know, obviously taking into account the calibre of the opposition. But Jim, what were your thoughts on Scales, given this is the first time I've seen him in a Celtic shirt?
It looks okay, but as you said, given the quality of the opposition, we were 3 goals up at the time. It was, you know, it's a good time to get the guy on the park. I don't think you can tell too much from that. I mean, let's see him if he's playing against Hibs or Aberdeen away from home. Let's see what he's like then. So he looked okay. He looked okay.
Yeah, he did. He did look okay, Tony. The thing about that is, and me and Jim have both qualified our thoughts on Scales by saying, you know, he was playing against a lesser opposition, but Carol Starfelt was playing against that same Leicester opposition and didn't look quite as assured on the ball. There's a bit of a debate coming up, and I can see it in the comments. It was happening last night after the game. What are your thoughts on potentially, you know, Scales taking that centre-back position off Starfelt? Are we getting too excited too early, or do you think it's something that's a possibility?
It's always a possibility, because Liam Scales can play that position and the manager knows that. But, you know, Starfelt with a dodgy 10 minutes, 15 minutes for me last night, you know, and after that, he was fine. Mm. I think he looks really comfortable beside Cameron Carter-Vickers. You know, it doesn't help when you're chopping and changing a defence every week and you're playing with a different partner, as Starfelt has. You know, and I had my initial, you know, kind of pop at Starfelt when he first came, but I think the more he plays, he'll settle into it and he'll become the defender that we hope. You know, I just feel that at this stage, he's becoming a bit of a whipping boy.
Yeah.
You know, for no apparent reason, because Celtic haven't really given away many goals, have they, this season?
No.
And I can't remember all of them being Starfelt's fault. Mm-hmm. You know, maybe one or two that you can point the finger at and say, but that happens with defenders. Defenders make mistakes. They switch off. Sometimes you get punished. So we need to kind of get behind this guy. And, you know, I think he's one of these guys that every fault that he's making, people are picking up on it because they've been quick to criticise him. You know, he's came from another country to play his football, different footballing culture altogether. So there is a bedding in process. I know people say he probably should have bedded in now, but I think there's still lots to like about Starfelt. You know, and he's slowly but surely finding his way. And, you know, yeah, he had a bad 10 minutes. First 10 minutes last night, he looked a bit comfortable and uncomfortable, sorry, and you know, made a hash of passes and all that. But, you know, I put it down, some players still get nervous. And I quite like that, because that can be a good thing too. It can bring the best out in you. So I think you just kind of calm it down a wee bit with him. And I know I had an early kind of pop at him, but I've kind of taken a step back and cut him some slack on that. And, you know, But as far as Liam's skills go, you know, you can't judge on, you know, 20 minutes against Raith Rovers. But if the manager deems that Carroll Starfelt needs to come out and Liam Scales can form a partnership with Cameron Carter-Vickers, then that's up to the manager. And I always qualify that by saying they watch these guys in training every day. So that will convince them whether he's going to do that moving forward or not.
Yeah. Well, so you need a settled back four.
Yeah.
To try and move on. I think Starfelt has been unjustly criticised.
Yeah.
I think he scored that daft own goal at AZ. And I think just in the same way that you're saying that you can't judge Liam Scales in a game like last night, the two hardest games we've had is AZ away and Ibrox. And I think Starfelt played really, really well in both of those games. So he makes a mess of 10 minutes against Raith Rovers. Who cares, basically? So I think you're judged on the big games. And I think he did really well in those two big games. He came in against Hearts, his debut. Maybe he made a mess of the first tackle. But you know, I think we need to get off his back. I think as a support, I think we just have to calm down about the whole thing. I think every week, people are getting really high and really low. We just have to breathe. You know, it's like this. We're only six league games in. There's 38 games. It's like stepping stones. You know, we've got another 32 stepping stones to go. And I think we just need to relax, because I've not been on last week. But I just feel as if, you know, when I go on social media, we're either the best thing in the world or the worst thing in the world. And the answer's in between somewhere. And I think we just need to calm down. I think maybe the 2-6-0 victories thought, oh, the big chap's cracked it after only a few games. Maybe they're the exceptions. And maybe the game, I was at the Ross County game 2 weeks ago now, and I thought maybe that's who we're going to play, where we play some nice, neat football with not a lot of penetration, but we win the games. And I've got no issues with games at home. I think we'll do okay. It's the games away. And I said, after the Hearts game, he has to have two teams. He has to have a team for home, which will score goals for fun, and he has to be able, you know, just do something. He has to tweak his system in some ways for the games away from home. Because it looks as if we're going to struggle. And the Livy game last week was a perfect example. Albeit, the squad is still really light. And in terms of, and we've got, unfortunately, a few injured players at the moment as well. So, but we need to crack that away game, because we're going to Pittodrie soon, we're going to Easter Road soon, we're going to Fir Park soon. So keep that back four. Vickers, Starfelt, and who knows what the fullbacks are going to be.
Yeah, the fullbacks is a good conversation point, and one we'll come on to a bit later. I know that me and Paul John talked about that a bit in the post-match coverage last night. Didn't really come to any conclusions, but when do we ever on this show? We just kind of keep the conversation going. But Jim, I'll come back to you on that, and Tony, I'll get your thoughts in a second. Going back to the Livingston game, what about the Livingston game was it for you that was, you know, that meant we didn't get the victory in comparison to last night? What were the differences you saw in the way we were playing away from home to the way we do play at home?
I just said that the squad is still light. I think when I saw the team last week playing on the plastic pitch, the tight pitch, the physicality of Livingston, I thought we might struggle here today. You look what's on the bench, you think there's not much there as well. I know there was a lot of things on social media about the substitutions should be made earlier and ball and goalie and all this kind of stuff, but it's not as if we had Larson and Sutton on the bench. You know, you're only going to bring these kind of guys on. So you bring on Ralston or you bring on Montgomery, will they make that much of a difference? No, really, because I don't think we have the players there. And I think the mentality is a big thing. I don't think we have a strong enough mentality in the team, because the thing that I think is dead obvious, and Tony and I agreed with this a while ago, that we should have kept Scott Brown. Not to play every game, but to try and influence things in there, possibly a mentor to Sorrow, maybe work with Ange, because he has got that kind of mentality. And anyone joining Celtic...
As the number one audio company, iHeartMedia gives you access to all. Every audience, live conversations, trusted influencers, and the insights and data you need to grow. iHeartMedia is your access company. Go to iHeartResults.com for more. It's the Marketer's Report. This week, Patrizia Spagnoletto, Global Chief Marketing Officer, Direct-to-Consumer for Warner Brothers Discovery, weighs in on the difficult task of building and retaining consumer trust.
Trust is a really hard thing to build and a really easy thing to destroy, and we have to be very respectful about that. Our partnership with iHeart has really helped us build that trust and that relationship with the on-air talent. The best thing for us to do is to build a relationship with our consumers. And if those consumers have a relationship with the DJs that are on air, then we want to build on that. House of the Dragon, which was one of our most successful, if not the most successful campaign we've ever done for a show, audio was a core part of that.
As the number one audio company, iHeartMedia gives you access to all. Every audience, live conversations, trusted influencers, and the insights and data you need to grow. Not just a media company, iHeartMedia is your access company. Go to iHeartResults.com for more.
4 or 5 years ago, we're walking into a team full of guys who are mentally strong winners. You know, if things are going bad, these are the guys that could help to pull you through. So if you're a new guy coming in, if you're Jota or you're a badder, who are you looking to help you pull through? You know, Ralston, Taylor, Turnbull, a Yeti. But these guys aren't strong mentally, so we don't have enough mentally strong players for me. And up against Livingston, who are pretty mentally strong, they know how to defend, they know how to play on that pitch. And when you saw the team, you thought, not enough players there. Of a decent mental strength and skill as well. Obviously, Callum McGregor wasn't playing, Kyogo wasn't playing. And you think, if those two players are out of the team, are we going to struggle? That's a big concern I have. I mean, we're only 6 games in, and as I said, I think we should relax and see how things go. But I just think, and you only get that strong mentality by winning games and going a long, unbeaten run where you then feel confident that we will win these games. Whereas if you're, every time you go away from home, you lose, psychologically you're thinking, not that confident. And then when you lose a goal, you think, how are we going to get this back? Who's going to help us get this back? Who are the guys that are going to drag us through this game? I don't know if we've got that many players like that. And you need that to win the league. I mean, our main rivals across the city, they've got players like that that will dig out results. I mean, I think we beat Ross County, they went up at St Johnson, didn't they? You know, one goal down, half an hour to go, they bring it back. I'm not so sure I can see that in the Celtic team, which is a concern.
Yeah, it does seem like a concern. David Maloney on LinkedIn, he's commented, and remember, you can watch us on YouTube, Facebook, Twitch, LinkedIn, a bunch of different places. David Maloney has commented, are we expecting too much from what is a threadbare squad? Lots of fellas who are not match fit. So that speaks to your point, Jim. Tony, where do you stand on this? Is it a threadbare squad? Is it injuries? Is it mentality? Are those the things that we're struggling with at the moment, or is it a combination of the lot?
Multiple choice. Answer E, all of the above. I think you'll find if you have been asked a question like that. Yeah, I couldn't agree more with Jim. I actually think as well that, and to touch upon what Jim's saying, I think a wee bit of an identity crisis as well. Don't know what we are in terms of team-wise, you know, and Jim spoke about it there, about losing Scott Brown. I also think as well, there's a big thing, you know, you lose that kind of Scottish influence as well. I don't know if there's enough Scottish players in the team. And I mean good players, and I'm talking about maybe guys like, you know, Lewis Ferguson, something like that, Alan Campbell, you know, guys that kind of, they know it, they get it, you know, to dig you out a hole. I looked around Livingston and total lack of leadership, you know. You never lacked leadership with Scott Brown. You wouldn't have lacked it if Callum McGregor had been playing. You know, that kind of thing. So, you know, and I touch upon that we're just struggling to find our identity. We know what we want to be as a football team, but we're kind of the sum of parts just now, and that sum of the parts is not equal in the whole, if you get what I mean, which is why we're up there 1 minute, down there the next. You know, and when Livingston scored on Sunday, I turned to my dad and I said, I don't know if you'll recover this. And Livingston scored, what, 25, 26 minutes in?
Yeah.
And he looked at me and he was like, nah, we'll be all right. And like Jim said, you looked at the bench and you thought, there's no game changers. And up until 71 minutes, the manager didn't do anything to affect the game. He watched the same game unfold, which was a concern as well. You know, you have to do something. As Jim said, you have to find a way of coping with away games, and we all know the squad's threadbare and it's light, you know, but somehow we have to do something and kind of find out who we are first and foremost as a football team. And that's not a criticism, just observations in terms of when it's good, it's very good, but when it's bad, it comes off the rails pretty spectacularly, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that's, I think that's the kind of, the truth does lie somewhere in between, but we have to find a consistent way of playing. But above all else, we have to find a consistent way of playing and winning. Yeah. You know, this up and down, you know, it's no good. It's no, certainly no good for the supporters, and it'll be no good for the manager, you know, because this 50% win ratio, it's, you know, you and that's what you're criticising. You're not criticising the manager or the process. No, you're criticising the win ratio, you know, or losing ratio, whatever way you want to spin it. Because at this moment in time, it's no good enough. And I know it's early and there's lots of games left. So, but we have to address it quickly because we say we've got a month coming up where we go to Pittodrie, Fir Park and Easter Road in that order. And at this moment in time, how many Celtic supporters are confident of winning all three, or two out of three, or even one out of three? If you did a straw poll, I think you'd be surprised with the answers to it.
Mm. Just to come back to what you were saying about Scott Brown, just briefly before we move on to the next topic, you know, I get the point that people make about him being a leader and being, you know, inspirational and things like that. The only thing I have in opposition to that is he wasn't that much of a leader or an inspiration last season. Do you think, even with the performance last season, that he could still have provided something positive for the squad?
Me?
Jim, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. 100%. I think if you look at somebody like James McCarthy, I would imagine James McCarthy's earning more than Scott Brown earned last year. And I'm not saying James McCarthy's not a good player. Obviously, he's got a good pedigree in the EPL. But playing for Celtic is a bit different. He's been playing for teams where most weeks, if you pick up a point here and there, that's pretty good. So again, that's getting back to the mentality thing, I think, of playing for Celtic. And I just think this year, I think we have to have a go at Ange when it's justified to have a go at Ange. But if we don't win the league this season, to me, it's Lowell's legacy. This is all down to Lowell and how much of a shambles he made last season and the amount of time it took to appoint a new manager. And the guy's on his own, the big chap's on his own. You know, no sports science, no recruitment, no fitness coaches, with a chief executive for 2 minutes and then he disappears. He's got a backroom staff where we don't know how good, bad or indifferent they are. He's in a foreign country. The big chap's doing everything on his own. And and having somebody like Scott Brown there, I think, might have helped off the park as well as on the park. We talk about Sorrow. Sorrow's a bit of a headless chicken. I mean, Brown could have mentored him, you know. So I think he could have contributed to this season. He wouldn't have played every single game, but under a good manager, and you saw the manager before Neil Lennon get a lot out of Scott Brown, you know. And I think Ange Postecoglou, whatever you might think of him, he's an intelligent, articulate man. I think he's really, really good, and I think he's got an astonishingly difficult job. I think he's making a really good fist of it. The results are not great, but if you take, as I said, I'll be quite concerned about the ups and the downs. You know, we're either great or we're either terrible. You look at the team that was on the park against Livingston last week, you look at the bench and tell me that a different manager might have got more out of that team. Maybe puts the subs on earlier. What subs? Montgomery? Rolston? Are you really going to make that much of a difference? Why are we playing ball and goalie? Ange sees him in training every day. He must be doing okay in training. He's on a lot of money. You know, go on there, son, and earn your keep. You know? And he fits into Andy's system. So those are the guys that we've got. And as I said, when I saw the team last Sunday and saw the bench, you thought, this might be difficult today. And it was difficult. And I don't blame the manager for that. You can see maybe he should have made a sub 10 minutes earlier. As I said, who would you brought on? Would he make a difference? You know, so I'm going to cut the manager lots of slack. Because to me, it's low. This is all down to him. My theory is basically that this season is kind of what I expect after this length of time. Because if you look back at last season, the team that won the league, deservedly so, extraordinarily good season, 102 points on the board. I said, before the season started, I'd expect them to be 10, 12 points less this season, around about the low 90s or so. We'd an extraordinarily bad season last year, 77 points. If we get our act together, you can add 10, 12 points to that. High 80s. There will not be much in it. The Glasgow derbies will be major, major game. We have to flip how that worked last year. But 6 games in, and the last time I was on, is the reason that we're optimistic as Celtic fans is because our major rivals had lost at Tannadice.
Mm.
That's kept us in it. And also they blew the chance to bring in £40 million. So in terms of comparing this season with last season, they went unbeaten last season, took them two games to lose that unbeaten record. They had a 100% home record last year, took them three games to lose that record. They hardly lost any goals last year. They're losing quite a few goals this season. So that's what gives me a bit of hope. Not what we're doing, but the fact that they're not at that kind of level that they were last season. And that's how we won the league back in 97-98. We stopped their 10 because basically it's all about trying to put as many points on the board as you can, and hopefully your main rivals don't put that many on. And back in 97-98, we didn't have that good a season, but they had a worse season.
Mm.
And that's what keeps me optimistic, because if we were up against a team that were playing the way they played last season, we would be 9 points down and the league would be finished. And last week was, not great, but we kind of lost one relative point to the opposition. And who's to say they go to Dundee tomorrow and drop a couple of points, and we win the Sunday and it's back to two, we're all happy again. What I'm saying. I think we have to breathe. Take each game as it comes.
I think the problem with last week, Jim, was the actual nature of the performance. It was really insipid. And the manager watched it for 71 minutes without actually doing a thing. And by the time he did something, it was very late and you were scrambling and struggling to get a point. And I get the point that we don't have much, but whatever options you have on the bench, there are always options. You could have did a few things. And I was lambasted for suggesting Monday that you could have put Cameron Carter-Vickers up top and went long, and just tried to play off second balls. And I know it goes against every five, but you were chasing a point, A point would have ended up being a good result at Livingston, but you lost. But he watched that train go by and really did nothing. Or Abada's, you've said that Abada's gone off form. Why not then play Abada through the middle? You could have done two or three different things, right? Maybe even more. And I know you're limited with the players that you have, and that is all down to the board and lack of preparation and lack of numbers. And I get all that, but I'm talking about actually influencing a football match as a manager and what you're paid to do. And I think that's why Celtic supporters gave Ange criticism for the first time. I don't think it's criticism for the sake of it. It was just the nature of that performance. Whereas in every other away performance, you could say, well, they've actually played okay in spells and they've turned up. Mm. For the whole 90 minutes in that game, Celtic were pretty rank rotten. You've got to concede that.
And I wouldn't disagree with that. No,
I think that's what the counter-egg, because I, as well, say that, can't you just turn and say, well, it's the manager's fault, this or that. But you have to turn around and say, when results aren't what you would expect, then he has to sort of, and I thought the manager carried the can for Sunday in terms of not reacting to a situation which he just watched for 71 minutes and then decided I need to do something, but didn't do much to shake it up. That was all. So I think that's, but I agree in terms of, what you've said about the manager and stuff, and he is fighting it alone, and he's got all these in his hamstring, and he's also had to contend with a horrendous injury list. That I'm on board with all of that, but I would just like to see.
I thought they were poor last week. What you said there, unacceptable performance. But the other point I'd like to make is the fact that what we said in seasons going by is that a number of players were pushed really hard. Kieran Tierney, Forrest, all these kind of guys. We just come back from playing in the kind of sweltering heat of Seville. Montgomery played the whole game. Wilson played the whole game. So I'm assuming what would normally happen like that, all these players would go and visit a fitness coach or a sports science guy for him to assess where we think they are with these guys. Maybe don't play them on a Sunday or give them 10 minutes of it. And just having to do this himself.
Yeah.
Mm. He's making these judgments. And the big chap that got injured last night in the warm-up, should he have been involved anyway?
At all?
At all. I don't know. And just making that decision. So he's having to assess the fitness of players as well. He's a one-man band just now, and he's going to get things wrong. Absolutely. They maybe looked at Montgomery and Ross and said, you're absolutely knackered on Seville the other night. Just leave this one out, guys, or whatever. But I do accept the fact he could have changed things. I don't think the card he has to play are that good.
Mm.
And I just think the fact he's getting left on his own And there was a bit of the game where you saw him, he just looked dead lonely. You know, he wasn't looking for help from Kennedy or Strachan. It was all on him, you know. And he's got the hardest, one of the hardest footballing coaches' jobs out at the moment, trying to resurrect this team. And he's getting hung out to dry, right, left and centre, by the board, et cetera, et cetera. So, yes, by all means, have a go at the big chap. I don't mind that at all. But I'm just dead sympathetic towards him. And we'll get there.
I think most Celtic supporters are, though, to be fair.
Yeah, I think so.
We're still on board, you know. Yeah.
We'll get there. Yeah.
It's an interesting few points you raise. I've spoken to you about this, Tony, numerous times. I'm very much, if there's such a thing as an Ange bus, I'm very much on it. But I think your criticisms are valid, and I think there's a middle ground to be found somewhere where we accept that he has not made brilliant game-to-game decisions at times, but that he is working with sort of things that are in circumstances that are making his life more difficult. Lanky67 and Danielle Farrelly on YouTube both commented in agreement with each other that they think that the appointment of a sports scientist to help him out, as Jim raised the point just before there, might be helpful for him. So for anybody who didn't hear, obviously earlier in the week, Celtic appointed ex-Morton boss Anton McElhone as head of sports science. Tony, I'll come to you first on this. It was something that Ange specifically raised in a press conference a few weeks ago, that a sports scientist was something that he was looking to appoint. It was actually something that when he said it, I wondered what his thoughts were on the overall level of the staffing and the work being done behind the scenes at the club was. Given the injury record that we've seen and the lack of proper handling of players that we've seen over the years, you know, overplaying an older Scott Brown, overplaying Callum McGregor, overplaying Kieran Tierney to the point where he had multiple injuries, I think something like a sports science department is something that's been sorely lacking at the club long before Ange came in. Are you encouraged to see that appointment being made, Tony, and do you think it's going to help us quite a bit in the longer term?
Without a doubt, that's just clearly something that's been needed for a long time. And also as well, Ange wouldn't have mentioned it if he didn't think he needed it.
Mm.
And I think as well, if you trust this manager and this is the man that you believe is going to be there for a long-term future, then I think if he's asking for various demands, as long as they're no outrageous, then you accede to them, don't you? Sports scientist, yep, grant you that. You know, a number two, because someone made a point the other day that Celtic haven't actually really made any managerial changes except swap one in and one out.
Mm.
We don't actually have an assistant manager or a number two or an assistant coach or whatever you want to call it. We have swapped Lennon for Ange and that's it. Now, I agree wholeheartedly with Jimmy. He does need help and he needs it. And I think it would be beneficial to him to bring in a trusted lieutenant, a right-hand man. Most football clubs function with that, you know. So I think it wouldn't be unreasonable if Ange was to turn in and say, can I get a number two and can I get this guy? And Celtic should say, yep, yeah, you can bring that. And then you get the matter of players. Now, you know fine well, you can speculate all you want about the players that have came in. You know fine well the one player that he has identified was Kyogo. So he's clearly got an eye for a player.
Mm.
So I would even trust his judgment on that. When January comes round and we say, right, have you got a list? There's my list. Who can we get out of that? You know, so, but I would say to the manager at this moment in time, because I think Jim's right, you look at him and he does look sometimes forlorn and he needs a bit of help. So I would be having that conversation with him and saying, right, Ange, what do you need? How can we help you? You know, because you are buoyed by the fact that Rangers aren't firing on all cylinders, and it might not actually take that much for Celtic to go toe-to-toe and possibly overtake Rangers this season. But you have to address things as you're going along. Sports scientists, yep. A number two, yep. More players in January, yep. Address their waveform, yeah. Things like that. But if the manager and the board can have that conversation and it's amicable and it's cordial, then yeah, help him. Anybody coming in to the staff is going to help the manager. And I think that's what he needs. He needs help because you look at him and you, there are things that he's done since he came in that you've been really impressed by. So you want him to be armed with every tool possible. And, you know, I'm not saying if he doesn't win the league, then, you know, that's it. You know, I think if Ange is given every tool at his disposal and given a fighting chance, then he can certainly make a fist of it for the title this season and could conceivably win it, because he's only got Rangers to beat and a Rangers side that aren't the force of nature that they were last season.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. I think, you know, there's been enough to see from Ange that he has the right attitude. As Jim said earlier, he speaks very eloquently and very intelligently. And like you say, I think giving him everything at his disposal to help him do the job that he needs to do could only be to our benefit. I think that's the only thing stopping him. Sorry, Jim, on you go.
Also, Laura, I think it's an absolute scandal what's happened in Celtic Park. We're happy to bring in Eddie Howe and a cast of thousands.
Yeah.
And the big chap's on his own. Right.
Yeah.
And I don't know who makes the decisions at Celtic Park, because there's a complete and utter lack of transparency. Mackay's away. Who's making the big decisions? You know, Tony said, well, Ange would have to maybe go and ask. He shouldn't have to go and ask.
Mm.
You know, if we're a clever, forward-looking club, we know what we needed. Eddie Howe said we needed all these things. So Ange should have at least most of those things as well. Why isn't he getting all these things?
It does make
you wonder. Point the finger at that, because we don't know who's making these decisions.
Yeah, but Jimmy, he accepted the job on that basis then, that he wasn't getting a cast of thousands in the background staff. You know, so you can't have it both ways, you know. So he must have asked the question.
Tony, it was a question I was going to put to Jim there, which is, Jim, do you think the cast of thousands that Eddie Howe wanted was perhaps rejected by the club, and that's maybe why he didn't take the post in the end up? Or,
well, I think we'll never know. I think like all these things, we'll never know how these things work. But the word on the street was Eddie Howe had the job on the understanding he had all these pals coming in with him. Now, those cast of thousands may have been about, I don't know, 8, 9, 10 people or whatever. But if the board or Peter Law or whoever it was at the time thought this is the way forward, then when we bring in whoever else and it's not Eddie Howe, surely they're thinking, this is what this guy needs. He needs the same things. We can't just, you know, take the cheap option here and bring in this guy on his tods, you know, and put everything on him. And that's exactly what they've done. They put everything on the one guy. And it's so unfair. And because there's a lack of transparency, I don't know who to blame with this. Don Mackay left. I mean, that's the first thing I've been on since he left. What a shambles. What a shambles that is. You know, who gave him the job?
I was wanting to get your thoughts on this, Jim. What do you think of that whole situation and the fact that he has left?
Who gave him the job in the first place? So was there an interview panel of Dermot Desmond and Bankier and Peter Law? And what if Bankier and Law voted 2-1? Is that how he got the job? Did they know what this guy was like before he came in? And if he did what they thought he was going to do, why did they get rid of him? Did he really leave for personal reasons? And obviously he must have signed one of these non-disclosure agreements, which always makes you dead suspicious. There's something to hide, maybe. It's a total and utter shambles. Total. And they're so out of touch with what's happening. And I'm sure you saw the release of the annual results this week.
Yeah.
Number one highlight that Ian Bankier thought in the last season was we were second in the SPL. How completely and utterly out of touch is that? Tony's a wordsmith. You pick your words carefully. You only have to write an annual report once a year. What's your biggest highlight, Ian? We were second in the league. Really? Is that what you're saying? So the guy who thought that was a good idea, did he play a major part in bringing in Don Mackay? If he did, was that a good idea? So I just think the decision-making at the club has been appalling, not just last season, but for a good number of years. And I think we've been successful in spite of, rather than because of them. And I watched, the first time in a while, I watched a Champions League game the other week, watched the PSG game just to see the kind of Messi, Mbappe, Neymar thing. And within about the first 5 minutes, the commentator said, FC Bruges, this is the fourth successive season in the Champions League. I hope Lowell and Desmond are watching that and hanging their head in shame. Bruges, 4 years in a row in the Champions League. Why weren't we there? I think we know the answer to that.
Too much to that, Jim. Sheriff Tiraspol from Moldova.
In that period where we won the quadruple treble, which is a success. Of course it's a success. But every single competition, we were the favourites. We were the hot favourites to win that. But to qualify for the Champions League, 4 years on the spin, we should be doing that. And the team you just mentioned to, I can't pronounce, exactly the same thing.
Yeah,
it's just poor planning, it's poor decision making, it's poor management, it's poor everything. Imagine the chief executive leaving after 72 days. That's just a shambles. And then Big Charlie, he's on his own again. Like, doesn't even have a chief executive to go and run things by. He's on his own again. And people are giving him pelters. Just cut the big guy some slack. Anyway. That's my rant over for today, Lauren. Sorry.
It was a wonderful rant, Jim, to be fair.
Thank you.
We'll give Jim a breather, Tony, and we'll look ahead to the weekend. We've got Dundee United coming up. Another home game, which for us is a positive, but we're going to be without your Josh Giakoumakis, who obviously has had a bad run of luck and got injured in the warm-up. We were sitting in the post-match before that was announced last night, wondering why we hadn't seen him. given that we're going to be short at the topic again at the weekend, what are you wanting to see from Celtic playing against Dundee United? What are you hoping is different from the outing against Livingston? Is there something from the Raith Rovers game that you hope we take forward?
Do you know what I would maybe like to see? And I mentioned it earlier. I was disappointed that Azetti didn't score last night, and he looked off it against a Championship team, and that caused me great concern. So I actually thought I would play a badder through the middle.
Right.
See his lightning reaction to that shot from Turnbull. That was a centre-forward reaction.
Mm-hmm.
We'll follow it in. And I think Abada has played through the middle before. And I think he could be a more natural centre-forward. And also, he'd be a guy who would run onto things. So you could play through balls to him, you know, from the midfield. So I don't think it'd be the worst shout. I think Adjeti at times when he's just too static. You know, and just, you know, people say he's a penalty bot or a six-yard box predator. Fine, I get that. But you have to give him service. You know, but he'll know bust his hump trying to get it, and he'll know, you know, sometimes he does come looking, but other times, you know, he's quite happy just to drift out a match. You know, so when I just think if a bad I could do a kind of Kyogo, play on a shoulder, run through the middle, and also he scored a couple of goals where he's shown lightning, sharp reactions, you know, as a centre forward. I think he scored more of the European games, didn't he? We put it away, it was a rebound, they put it away. Mm-hmm. You know, so I would actually quite like to see that. You know, when I play Jota and possibly Montgomery, where Abada was, you know, just, you know, which gives you a kind of front three that are of repute, you know, and could score goals, to my knowledge, because I don't know. I think Ajeti's trying hard, but I just can't see it. You know,
it doesn't seem to be working for him.
Against Ross County, I mean, scored two good headers, but that apart, never really did anything else in the game.
No.
And I know it's maybe criminal to say, but strikers are judged on scoring goals. I totally get that, but you're wanting a bit more. You can't be out the game for 70 odd minutes. You know, you just can't. But I just think that Abada would give you a decent option. And as Jim said, because his form was dipping, being out wide.
Mm.
And again last night, he didn't have a particularly great game, but, you know, I just thought that the header was pretty good. You know, lightning reflexes. I mean, followed it in. You can't really teach that. That's instinctive. He's going to have a shot. I'm going to follow this in case the goalkeeper parries it. There you go. He's parried it, and bang, it's in the net in a split second. So things like that, I don't really have an issue with Celtic playing at home. I just think they're very good at home, and it's the big, wide, expansive park, and, you know, they usually play well. But Dundee United have already beaten Rangers, you know, a couple of decent results. The new coach, Thomas Coates, is making a name for himself, you know. So, again, I go back to it. You have to earn the right to beat every opposition you play this season, and every team, if they're following Livingston's template, will try and make it difficult for you. So you'll have to find a way of breaking them down. You know, but I think it's maybe easier at Celtic Park than it is away grounds. It's proven to be so far. And I liked McCarthy last night. I kind of thought, yep, that pass alone was worth the admission money. A cracking pass. You know, any Esther plays that, people are raving about it. You know, it was a wonderful pick out. You know, just, you know, a football brain in operation, which he clearly has. You know, yeah. So I'd like to see more of him and more of McCarthy do that kind of thing. You know, and as Jim alluded to at the top of the programme, I want a settled back four.
Yeah.
I'd maybe like to see the same guys play, you know, start the Dundee United game, which would then mean Cameron Carter-Vickers, Starfelt, Ralston and Juranovic, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. So I would like them to start with that just for the second game running, just to get some kind of understanding.
Yeah, it's funny actually, because I made a comment last night on I can't remember if it was half time or before the match that for me all I've seen McCarthy do is pass sideways and that was it. And as is always the case with Celtic, they made a mug out of me by going and doing exactly what I criticised them for before the match. But no, it was a fantastic pass. It was a fantastic goal. Jim, I was just looking at the table there as Tony was talking. It's a difficult one to figure out because we're a point behind Dundee United, but our goal difference is plus 12 while theirs is minus 1. There's obviously a chance there for us to score goals because they are conceding and maybe not scoring as freely as us. Do you think, you know, being at Celtic Park and everything that's gone before, even though they are above us in the league at the moment, we have a chance to really make a statement on Sunday and get a result there?
No, really. I kind of...
Come on, Jim, come on.
Well, I think, as you said, they're a point ahead of us. They've been a good start to the season. They've beaten our major rivals, which has given us cause for optimism. This will be the toughest league game, I think, that we've had at home. If we had McGregor and Kyogo, different conversation. But I thought the Ross County game was a kind of throwback to last season. Very pretty passing, with not a lot of penetration up front. And we got lucky with the goal. It's massive deflection, and Joe Hart made the save. And I think if Joe Hart hadn't made that save and they went to one each, I don't think we had the strong mentality again to have come back and won the game. So I was a bit concerned at the last game. Yeah, we're at home and we played a pretty pass and stuff like that, but... And it's not a bad copy, Tony, but when Abada through the middle, be a bit of a balancing act there, because any centre forward wants to run the games in the team.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Ayeti has done okay. You know, he does look a bit off it. I think he looks a bit off it all the time, basically. But Abada through the middle is not a bad copy. What does that do to Ayeti's confidence then? I think it'll be tough on Sunday. I think we'll win, but I think it'll be a lot tougher than the games that we've had before. Hopefully not. Hopefully we do get to make a statement, but the fact that they're, you know, doing well in the league this year shows that they're always doing something right. And obviously they're a game plan when they beat their major rivals early in the season. So come to Celtic Park, we're thinking a game plan as well. But I think it'll be tight, but I think we'll win.
Yeah.
2-1, 3-1, something like that.
John McVeigh making a good point in YouTube. We need to start scoring more goals than the opposition. That would be a start, John. That is how you win football matches, so we'll try and do that. Lanky67 again on YouTube thinks we'll win 2-1 on Sunday. Will McMillan on YouTube thinks we'll win 4-0 on Sunday. So there's a various different opinions coming through, and we love to hear it. Get your comments in from wherever you're watching on Twitch, YouTube, Twitter, Facebook. And let us know your thoughts on what the score is going to be on Sunday. Don't forget as well, you can also subscribe to State of Mind YouTube channel, which will get you notifications. The subscription button, pressing that doesn't cost you anything, but what it does is get you notifications whenever we go live or whenever a new video goes up on YouTube. So if you get subscribed, I believe the last time I spoke to the boss, around 65% of the people who watch this channel are actually not subscribed. So if you're one of those people, we'd really appreciate it if you did press that button. Doesn't cost you anything, and you can get notifications whenever we go live. We've not got just football content, we've got ex-footballer interviews, we've got music and fashion shows, and we've got lots of new things coming up in the future. So if you get subscribed, you'll not miss out on any of that. The last 15 minutes of the show, I wanted to talk to you guys about a certain Mr. Henrik Larsson, who turned 50 this week. I don't know about you guys, but it made me feel particularly old to hear that. But He certainly for my lifetime, the greatest Celtic player I've ever seen. Probably the greatest Celtic player I ever will see. Tony, I'll come to you first. Sorry. Henrik Larsson, continue.
He was the only foreigner voted in the greatest ever Celtic 11 in a night in Glasgow. That tells you all you need to know. And I've said before, and I wrote it in the book, that in the last 25 years or 30 years, two players brought unbridled joy to the Celtic supporters, and I mean joy. Lubomir Moravcik was one, Henrik Larsson was the other.
Mm.
You know, 242 goals in 315 games ingrained in my mind, right? Those stats will never leave me, ever. And when I was asked to describe every goal, I thought at first, I can't do this. It's too many. Was he going through it in the games that you were at or you might have worked at? It just came back to you in a blinding flash. And I had to actually break that down into days, right? So I would key in a date, you know, like the Saturday to the Sunday. You see, if you keyed in Henrik Larsson in like a month, you broke the... It was like too many mentions. So I had to, and I eventually had to break it down into hours, right? Like going from like Saturday into the early hours of Sunday morning, stuff like that. That's how I did it. And that's how I actually, there was one goal that was missing, and it was a goal against St. Pat's in a qualifier in the Champions League in Ireland. And when I got to the end of it all, I got 241, and I knew he'd scored 242, and I was nearly in tears, and I had to go through every season, and I found it, thankfully. But, you know, it's a colossal total. He is the best foreign footballer that's ever played in Scotland. You cannot deny that or argue that. Rangers fans will say it was Loudrop or Gascoigne. Well, Gascoigne, the foreign, sorry, but, you know, probably Brian Loudrop. But Brian Loudrop wasn't there that long. He was there, what, 3 years, I think?
Mm-hmm.
Larsson was there for 7 years. You know, and his record speaks for itself. The moniker, the King of Kings, you know, and I think the Celtic supporters, there's that horrible footage when he holds up the medal in Seville. I didn't come here for this. And yeah, a few years later, he picks up the European Cup with Barcelona. And every supporter, Celtic supporter, celebrated that night because they felt as if they'd won it. They were on that journey with him. And then they cut to Thierry Henry, and he asks an interview, and he said, "We never lost to Barcelona, we lost to Henrik Larsson. I didn't see Ronaldinho, I didn't see Eto'o. I saw Henrik Larsson." You know, and his contribution coming off the bench, setting up two goals. You know, just the consummate professional, the ultimate team player, and, as you say, the best footballer, Celtic player of our generation, my generation, without a shadow of a doubt. And he just brings a smile to your face because you just go through the Rolodex in your mind of the goals, and can see him running through Chipping Close, you can see him at Chick at Tynecastle, all these things. And what they do, and the Celtic supporters, they just make you smile. And you're always thankful. Not that it ended, you're thankful that it happened. And for $650,000, it's a deal, it's a steal. It was a sale of the century. It really was. I omitted the swear word there, as you probably gathered, but you know, you cannot think about Henrik Larsson and not smile, and just, you know, you 50, yeah, just say happy birthday, Henrik, and I hope you're still basking in the glory of the fact that you played for some wonderful teams and gave every Celtic supporter some wonderful, wonderful memories.
He absolutely did that. And before I give some of my memories of Henrik Larsson, Jim, I'll come to you. You've seen a lot of Celtic players over the years. Where does Henrik Larsson rank for you amongst those?
A Rolodex for younger viewers was. He was no bad, Larsson. No, he's not bad. I think, as Tony said there, to pick him up for $650,000 was the steal of the century, definitely. That's what I like about football, is all these wee things that happen. What would have happened if we didn't get Larsson? You know, because he could quite easily went to a number of clubs. And the reason we got Larsson is we had Janssen. Mm. What did he get Janssen? You know, all these sliding doors kind of stuff. I talked to Elliot about being mentally tough. I mean, he's a guy who's, you know, at the top of that level in terms of being mentally tough. To come back from the leg break that he got, it was a horrendous leg break. And he's, yeah. You know, kind of at the time, it was this kind of angle kind of stuff. You know, so to come back for that and to go on and score as many goals as he did is testament to his mental strength. Because if you've had such a horrendous leg break, that's always in the back of your mind. And I always remember the first game he came back, three Celtic, and he had 50-50, and you came out with the ball, and you thought, Henrik's back. The highlight, certainly, Seville. Because I was fortunate to be there, and when Henrik scored the first goal, you thought, I'm at a European final, and we've scored a goal, and Henrik scored it, and he pops up and does it again. You've got nothing but fantastic memories of Larsson. Again, you know, before Larsson, I'm trying to think, did we have many foreign players at all? I'm trying to think, over to you, Tony. You know better than me.
That's a good question, isn't it? I'm trying to think.
Didn't have many, but if he was one of the first ones we had, then I think George Cadet, obviously, De Canio, and I'm not thinking they are. But it was a fairly new thing.
Phenomenon,
and to make the impact that he did, to score the goals that he did, to stay on for the length of time that he did, when he had offers to go to bigger and better clubs, no matter what Celtic fans think, there are bigger and better clubs out there, and he hung on for the 7 years. I was just surprised that you didn't make his greet there, Tony, because I was all kind of filled myself up to, you know, what we're going to say after Tony. This was okay, actually. It was fine. I can actually talk.
It's because it was a happy memory, you know.
Happy yeah. Memories. Very few players you would see are legends. Larsson's a legend.
He is absolutely a legend. And to that end, my memories of him are, well, I was 10 years old when he signed for us, and I was 17 when he left. So, you know, you don't get many more formative years in your life than that that decade where you go from being a pre-teenager to almost ready to go out and drink and be merry with your pals, you know. So Henrik Larsson really signifies for me the time at which perhaps, you know, I'm still obsessed with Celtic, but perhaps you're more obsessed with your football team than you are at any other point in your life. And I think the thing that for me that Larsson brings is a point of pride in that I can sit here and say I was a little bit too young to see McStay at his peak. And obviously anybody that came before that, Tommy Burns, Roy Aitken, back to the Quality Street gang with Bill Gleish, and then back to the Lisbon Lions and all that. You used to sit there, I remember up to the year of being 10 years old when we hadn't won a league and that kind of thing, and you would hear your grandparents and your aunts and uncles talking about the Lisbon Lions and the great teams of the 70s and 80s that we had, and you felt like you couldn't be part of that conversation because you didn't have that hero, you didn't have that one player that even they would look at and go, oh aye, he's up there with the best of them. And then Henrik Larsson came along and you could sit and say, I went to the games that Henrik Larsson played at. I remember watching him play, and I can say to you know, the next generation coming up in my family, well, I can be a bit patronising about it the way my elders were to me and say, he's good, but he's no Henrik Larsson, that kind of thing. And one thing that always stands out to me that I've never seen anybody do before or since was he used to always do this bend and run along the line of the defence where he would be in an offside position, he would come in behind the centre-backs and just curve it out again between one of the centre-backs and the wing-back timed the run perfectly and always had, obviously, passers of the likes of Lambert, Petrov, Sutton to flick the ball on, that kind of thing. He timed these runs absolutely perfectly, and I think as much as he's finishing, that kind of skill was as much of a reason why he got the numbers of goals that he did. And I have to say, I've only ever cried after one football match in my life because of the result, and that was Seville. As I always say, Celtic fans hated Jose Mourinho before it was cool. And I'll never forget it, but I remember watching Henrik Larsson with that medal. And, you know, if it was any other player in the world, I'd be saying, I got over it, you know, you're just being spoiled, you're being a bad loser, you're being this and that. But the pain in his voice when he held that medal up and said, I didn't come here for this, it was real. And you knew he was playing not only for his own pride, but for the pride of all the Celtic supporters, the thousands of Celtic supporters who had made it to Seville and the thousands that were watching back home.
Mm. And Laura, he was that anointed. You didn't think that he wasn't going to get a hat-trick that night and win the game for Celtic.
Mm. Yeah.
That's the way you thought. The minute he made it 2-each, you thought, even when Celtic went down to 10 men, there was not a part of me that thought, Henrik will bail us out here, you know. They didn't think they wasn't going to bail us out. He'll score a hat-trick. Celtic were going to win that. So it's only when the final whistle went I knew Celtic had lost, because I just refused to believe that Henrik wouldn't score a hat-trick.
Well, I think also,
really big players turn up in really big games.
And he did.
And if half of the rest of the team had they got to near Henrik's level, would have won the game no bother. It's the fact that he was just literally head and shoulders above everyone else on the park, either team.
And
it's just a shame that we didn't have another four or five players that maybe had a six or seven out of ten as opposed to four or five out of ten. But hey ho.
Yeah. Laura, you were talking about the runs and the bending runs and stuff, and I did a feature for the Celtic Way, and it was seven defenders that played against Larsson.
Mm-hmm.
And to a man, they said he was impossible to mark because he vanished into thin air. They had him. And they would look and they would in a blinking of an eye, he was gone. And they would just say, there was nobody better. They said he was a phenomenon. They've never came across a better striker who could lose you in a packed penalty area as much as Henrik Larsson could. And he just said he was an absolute genius. And sometimes they had to just bow to that, the fact that he was a football genius, really.
Wasn't he that good at penalties, but apart from that?
He missed a couple, didn't he? But his fair share as well.
Listen, I think there's a bunch of things, you know. There's the iconic dreadlocks that he had and that kind of thing, and the tongue out celebration. The biggest regret I have as a Celtic fan was, and I sometimes separate these two things because of the change in manager and the change in kit and all that, and thinking they're further apart than they were. But Cadet left, and correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe Cadet left and Larsson signed within months of each other.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And the idea that we could have seen a portion of time two overlapped, it just would have absolutely been, I can't think of another strike force that would have scored as many goals as freely as those two.
And you know, also as well, Laura, one of my favourite Larsson goals isn't actually for Celtic, it's the diving header for Sweden.
Mm-hmm.
He scored in, I think it was the Euros, and what a header. I don't think I've ever seen anyone launch themselves at a football like that and know exactly what they're doing and where it's going. It's an astonishing header. I saw a clip of it the other day, and I watched it for about 5 minutes on a loop, because I was just sat there and I'm like, how did he do that? Just like, it was an astonishing goal, you know. And that, and of all the goals he scored for Celtic, and there's many, but that one also sticks out in my mind. It was a fantastic piece of skill.
Yeah. No, Jim, just to close out the conversation, you know, obviously we would have loved Henrik Larsson to stay for many more years, but there's a bit of me that takes a lot of pride. Tony touched on the performance for Barcelona. He got a fantastic send-off when he left there. He obviously had the loan spell at Man United. There's a bit of me that takes a lot of pride from the performances he put in for Barcelona and Man United, because I think it did vindicate a lot of what we said about Larsson to a lot of other football fans who maybe poo-hooed what we were saying because he was playing in the Scottish League. Do you think he's as appreciated as a world-class player, like, by other fans as we would like him to be?
I don't think we need to justify anything. I mean, I think, as I mentioned, I think the longevity, the 7 years, particularly from a player not from Scotland. I mean, and you get back to McStay, I suppose, again, he's Scottish, maybe Dalglish. That's all we had, players who put a good level, who stayed for a length of time. So I don't think, you know, we knew how good Larson was. And I just, as I said, I'm astonished that he stayed that long, because once he did leave and he achieved what he achieved, I suppose if you're Larson, you might think, maybe I should have left earlier. You know, what if I missed out? You know, I could have won two or three of these Champions Leagues. You maybe stayed too long. But we were lucky to have him, you know, and that's the punchline of the story. We were lucky to have him. And the day that he played his last game, and he was in tears, I think we were all in tears that day. Did he need Tony Haggerty to help us that day?
No.
And we knew that a legend was about to leave. And I think it's just astonishing that we had him for 7 years, given how good he was, given that Sweden tended, at that point in time, tend to qualify from the Euros and the World Cup. He was the main guy. He scored some great goals, as Tony just mentioned. But we managed to keep him. Astonishing.
Scored twice against Dundee United on his final appearance, didn't he?
Yeah. Right.
Make his greet, Tony. On you go. Make his greet.
Nothing. Make you cry about Henrik Larsson. You just smile. It warms your heart. Bottom line, as Laura says, you have the privilege of saying you witnessed a world class footballer at his peak.
Yeah. You know? I was at the. Was it his last Scottish Cup final? Was against Inverness and that that yellow kit, and he scored in that one. So I was at that game, and that sticks out in my. Sticks
you
out.
Should be yellow.
That was green kit, wasn't it?
It was green. That's it. The green with the silver shorts. That's it. I get mixed up between those two sometimes, but that's the one.
He bailed us out a hole that day as well, didn't he?
He did indeed, as he did many a time. I don't know if we'd have lost 1-0 to Livingston if we'd Henrik Larsson in our team last Sunday, but that's wishful thinking.
Yeah.
Thanks very much, Tony and Jim. Happy birthday, happy 50th, Henrik. Here's to many more happy years. And thank you to everybody watching on A Celtic State of Mind. Don't forget to subscribe, keep commenting. We love to hear from you. And we'll see you again on Sunday for the match coverage against Dundee United. Thanks very much.
It's the Marketers Report. This week, Patrizia Spagnoletto, Global Chief Marketing Officer, Direct to Consumer for Warner Brothers Discovery, weighs in on the difficult task of building and retaining consumer trust.
Trust is a really hard thing to build and a really easy thing to destroy, and we have to be very respectful about that. Our partnership with iHeart has really helped us build that trust and that relationship with the on-air talent. The best thing for us to do is to build a relationship with our consumers. And if those consumers have a relationship with the DJs that are on air, then we want to build on that. House of the Dragon, which was one of our most successful, if not the most successful campaign we've ever done for a show, audio is a core part of that.
As the number one audio company, iHeartMedia gives you access to all. Every audience, live conversations, trusted influencers, and the insights and data you need to grow. Not just a media company, iHeartMedia is your access company. Go to iHeartResults.com for more.
Sports Social Podcast Network. 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 Sports Social Podcast Network.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's chumbacasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.